Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order, 1st of February 2024. With me today is Co-Chair Senator Hoffman, Co-Chair Olson. Senator Bishop's excused. Senator Merrick, Senator Keel, Senator Wilson, myself, Stedman. We have a quorum to do business. We've got a little short agenda today. We're going to have the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority here. And we're going to talk about the FY25 mental health budget, which is SB 8188, and other issues that CEO and Board of Trustee members want to chat about. And we will have Mr. Steve Williams come forward and Anita Halterman, Chair. And maybe you can introduce yourself, and I see you've got a lot of support from the Board of Trustees. Maybe after you introduce yourself, we can have a brief introduction of them, and then we'll go through the presentation.
Thank you. I'm Anita Halterman. I am the Chair of the Board of Trustees for the Alaska Mental Health Trust. We appreciate the opportunity to present to the committee today. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority is a state corporation that administers the Alaska Mental Health Trust. We are a grant maker, an advocate for vulnerable Alaskans, and a systems change agent. By working with state and local governments, tribal, nonprofit, and provider partners, we endeavor to improve outcomes for our beneficiaries, and we continue to build on a continuum of care that meets the needs for Alaskans. I hope through our presentation today that we will illustrate that as a board and an organization, we prudently and carefully manage and apply our trust resources. I'd like to introduce the board. I am the chair of the board, and we have our fellow trustees in the room. Brent Fisher, if you'd raise when I call your name. Brent Fisher is our vice chair. Agnes Moran, she's our secretary and program and planning committee chair. Kevin Feynman is our audit and risk chair. John Morris is our finance chair. Rhonda Boyles, the trustee. And not here, but who will be joining us later in our committee meetings or for our committee presentation. John Sturgeon, our resource committee chair, is listening in. The Board of Trustees is an independent board, and we provide governance, fiduciary oversight, and direction to the organization in order to achieve the missions for the trust. The trustees have five-year terms. We are appointed by the governor, and we are confirmed by the legislature. The trust beneficiaries are Alaskans who experience mental illness, intellectual or developmental disabilities, Alzheimer's disease and related dementia, traumatic brain injuries, and substance use disorder. So these are our beneficiaries groups, and we do recognize that many of our beneficiaries fall into more than one category. We support both youth and adult beneficiaries, and we prioritize individuals that have behavioral health conditions or developmental disabilities that place them at risk of institutionalization if they don't have proper community support and services. We consider prevention of conditions when possible to be part of our mission. So the mission of the trust is to administer the Mental Health Trust, a perpetual trust, improve the lives and circumstances of trust beneficiaries, to protect and enhance the value of trust lands while maximizing revenues from them over time. So the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority is a state corporation. We administer the trust, a perpetual trust, to improve those lives of those beneficiaries. The trust operates much like a private foundation. We use our lands and cash assets to help ensure that Alaska has a comprehensive suite of mental health and disability services that meet the needs of beneficiaries and communities. The Trust Land Office, which we'll talk more about as we get to our presentation, it's contracted exclusively by the Trust to manage approximately 1 million acres of land and other non-cash assets in order to generate revenue over time to better serve our beneficiaries. And with that, I am going to turn the presentation over to Steve Williams.
We have a question. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have anyone on your trustees that are from rural Alaska?
Agnes is from Ketchikan. We are currently, no, most of our trustees are based in the Anchorage region. Unfortunately,
so the answer is no.
No, we do not. Right.
Thank you.
We do appreciate the representation from Southeast. There's a lot of rural areas. Where's it at? Yeah. We'll show you on the map. So,
Mr. Byman used to be from Nome. I can attest to that portion.
Okay. So, what we'll do is we'll go through each slide. That's a standard procedure here, and then committee members might have questions at the end of the slide. Just pause at the end of your slide, and if it looks like there's a question, I'll just call on the member. If not, just keep cruising along.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Steve Williams. I am the CEO of the Alaska Mental Health Trust. And before we go into the FY25 budget recommendations that were approved by the trustees, I thought I'd give a little bit of a foundation on the trust's financial position. On the slide in front of you, you can look at the trust's financial position from inception and to the close of FY23. And you can see that over time, there has been steady growth of the trust. There have been periods of time when there has been some dips, and that's largely related to what's gone on nationally in terms of our economy and national financial picture. But when you get over to the far right, FY23, you can see that we have grown slightly over FY22 when I was here last January. And if you look, and the total of our financial picture, our invested assets, is $818 million. The far right, the bottom green bar, represents the corpus of the trust, and that equals about $538 million. The light blue going up the bar is our budget reserves, and that represents roughly $218 million. And then the dark blue at the top of that bar is the equity of our commercial real estate, which is $61 million. So when I was here last time and presented to the committee, the total invested asset value was around $809 million. So we've grown a little bit since last year. And that's largely due to the way our assets have performed, our vested assets have performed, revenue generated by the trust land office that gets deposited as principal into the corpus of the trust, and then other revenue that gets generated by the land office.
Okay, so maybe before you go to the next slide, and if we have questions that are better answered later in your slide deck, that's fine, just let us know. But I'd like you to talk a little bit about the dip in 8 and 9 and what kind of payout you do with your trust. And do you, you know, chase returns, or how do you manage your trusts so it's successful?
To the chair, so in 2008, 9, and 10, that was, again, when the country was going through a downturn in the economy and the financial position of the country. One of the ways that we try to mitigate those dips and ensure that we can continue to make grants to our beneficiary organizations, our commitments to the state, as well as the operations of the Trust Land Office and the Trust Authority Office, is that budget reserve. And that budget reserve is based on a 400%. The target is a 400% payout for 4 years, so that as when that dip happens, we're able to ride that out, hopefully, and allow and wait for the economy to catch back up without having to reduce grant making or operations.
So in, you're telling me you have like 4 years worth of reserves set aside and you have some payout rate. Is it 10% or 20% or what do you, or five, what do you pay out a year and how does that work?
To the chair, I can get to that at a later slide.
Okay. Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, if I recall, the trust, isn't the trust managed by the Permanent Fund Corporation?
To the chair, Senator Hoffman, our investments are at the Permanent Fund, and we also have some investments at the Department of Revenue, Division of Treasury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions on this slide? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't quite follow the the answer on the value, it looks like there was no drop in the value of the corpus in the 08-09 crash. The permanent fund value dropped. Can you help me with why the green line just stays flat in 08-09?
To the chair, Senator Keel, I would have to, so that's our budget reserves, and I'd have to go back and provide a written response to the committee.
We'll go to the next slide. And it's not uncommon or to have a question that you may want to get back to us in writing on. So anytime that happens to come up, we'd prefer that than have, you know, you potentially misspeak or so there's no issue with the committee there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next slide just provides an update to the committee on the commercial real estate. If you'll recall on the previous slide, the commercial real estate equity was $61 million. We have seven properties. We own seven properties, two of them in Anchorage, one in Washington, one in Utah, and three in the state of Texas. The properties currently are, as the slide shows, are at 98% occupancy, which is far above what the national average is right now, which is around 80 to 81%. They're exceeding the national performance benchmarks, and we benchmark against the NCREIF. They are actively managed by staff at the Trust Land Office who are paying attention to those. That's their job, which is part of the reason why you can see that our occupancy rate is so high, is that seven properties, and that's their charge, is to make sure that they're managing them. There's occupancy, there's tenants. The properties themselves are maintaining their value, and they're generating revenue for the trust. And then we are currently in the window at that last bullet, managed to 7 to 20 year investments. That is where the commercial real estate properties sit in our asset management policy. And so our trustees have charged us, the resource management committee met at the beginning of January, and they have charged us, the TLO, to move forward and continue to manage the properties. But when a property presents the opportunity for sale, to bring that forward to the board to initiate that process. So we are in the process of starting to look at each property, the opportunities when it's fiduciarily prudent to dispose of or sell the properties.
And you want to give the public just a brief history on that issue? It's been a point of contention for several years. So you can give us a high level view of that, because there is, we've been waiting patiently for that whole issue to be, you know, in the history books.
To the chair, the history goes back to mid-2000s when the Board of Trustees at the time used trust principle to invest in commercial real estate, and the intent was to be able to generate another revenue stream to help ride out any downturns in our invested assets. And the properties were purchased. They've been actively managed. There was questions about whether trust principle could be used for the purchase of those properties. The Board of Trustees, the total invested amount was $39 million across the seven assets. The Board of Trustees a few years ago took trust income, $39 million roughly, and transferred it over into the corpus of the trust, which is principal, to address that issue.
And then isn't 98% occupancy substantially higher than it was 4 or 5 years ago?
To the chair, I don't know what the occupancy was 5 years ago. I know it's higher than it was last year when I was here presenting to the committee.
You can get back to the committee on that. I think you'll find it substantially higher, as I recall, which is positive.
Yeah.
And then I would assume the cash flow of those properties have also improved. Maybe you could also inform the committee of that position. We've taken a look at that every few years as we track these real estate holdings.
We'd be happy to do that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Williams, it's been a while since I read the legislative audit, but Was that the finding that transferring $39 million resolves the question of how the assets are managed under the laws?
To the chair, Senator Keel, the issue of transferring the $39 million over into the corpus of the trust addressed the issue as to whether or not the principal could have been used or should have been used at the time to purchase those assets.
And do you have a follow-up to Keel, or do you want more clarification, help from the auditor? Or?
Mr. Chairman, I think actually there may even be an audit request for a follow-up audit out there.
And so let's maybe not do a follow-up audit, maybe just an update from the...
It's not my request.
Yeah. I don't think there's a reason for an audit. I think just they'll be able to answer our questions. Yep, next slide, please.
Yes, thank you. This slide now gives you the picture of what is available, we're estimating to be available for FY25 in terms of trust spending. And Senator, Mr. Chair, this might get to the question you were asking me earlier. So when the trustees look at and we calculate what's estimated to be available for trustee approval for spending, we look at four different basically revenue streams. And each of those is looking back at a four-year average of that period of time, and then using that as the basis for generating the estimated available spending. I believe you're asking about the payout percentage, and the payout percentage is 4.25%. So we take 4.25% over the previous 4 years' value of our investments at the perm fund, and then that generates the $32.2 million that's available from those investments. The prior year funds carry forward, those are grant funds that either don't get fully expended or expended at all. They've been awarded out, and there's basically a lapse, and that lapse comes back to the trust for expenditure in the future for beneficiary needs. So the four-year average of that estimated for FY25 is $2.2 million. The trust land office spendable income is estimated to be $3.7 million. And then that last row, the interest earnings, $189,500, is basically Jafonzi accounts that are low interest bearing, and that gets factored in. So what the trustees do is they look back at the 4 years, they take the average in those four kind of revenue streams, and then we total that up, and that's what's available. And one of the reasons that we do that is to try and ride out or mitigate sort of the highs and the lows of any one of those four categories so that we have a more predictable, steady funds that are available for spending over time. And on the chart on the right, to the right, you can see what the available spending was for the previous 5 years, and you can see that there's been growth since FY20.
The reason we ask this question, I think almost every year when you come here, is to compare and contrast relative to the permanent fund, you know, or comparison to the permanent fund, where you have a five-year look back and a 5% payout. Some of us feel that that 5% is on the high side and it may be problematic in certain markets, where the mental health trust authority seems to have a more conservative structure and payout and the ability to still serve the beneficiaries without coming to us for emergency cash infusions.
Mr. Chair, if I could add to that, the 4.25% is what is the current payout percentage. I believe I mentioned last year that we had Cowan and Associates do a review of that percentage to determine whether it was too low or too high. We do that every few years to make adjustments. The 4.25% has not been the historical percentage of payout since the inception of the trust. It's actually grown a little bit over time. But I wanted to share that with the committee to let the committee know that we do have a third party come and look at that payout percentage to confirm or recommend changes to what that should be. And we do that so that we can ensure that there's funding available not only for today's services and programs for beneficiaries, but for future beneficiaries to ensure there's parity and equity in the future for them.
And maybe in your response to the committee, you could give us kind of a synopsis of that, you know, in writing, so the members could have it available when they want to talk about it and compare it to other issues in front of the committee.
Be happy to do that.
And another quick note, I would just like to say, I don't, speaking for the committee, have been reluctant to request entities like the mental health or the permanent fund or the retirement system to chase returns, the increased payouts. So I think we're very cognizant that that is a very dangerous area to go, and we want to do what we can to ensure that you're successful by not putting those pressures on the trust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is a illustration of how the spending that was on the previous slide is projected to, or what the trustees have approved for FY25. If you look at the top portion of the pie chart, the top right quadrant, the trust authority and the trust land office, those are the agency budgets for each operation. The trust authority is housed within the Department of Revenue. The trust land office is housed within the Department of Natural Resources. You can see right outside that the pie chart, the amounts that the trustees have approved for our agency budgets and for the committee. There are 17 staff that work at the trust authority office, and there are 19 staff that work at the trust land office. If you move down to the bottom right quadrant, the yellow colored slice of the pie, the MTAR grants, Mental Health Trust Authority Authorized Receipts, that's the fund source code that you all see in the state budget. And when you see that acronym, you know that those are trust funds, not state general funds. And you can see that the trustees have approved $10.2 million of grants to a variety of state departments and divisions within those departments. That $10.2 million represents, I think, 63 grants that are projected to be trustees have approved for FY25. The next slide will show you the various departments that those funds are being allocated to. The left-hand side of the pie chart, the darker green, are the authority grants. And you can see that's totaling around $19.4 million. Those are grants that go directly out from the trust to community organizations, tribal health corporations, local governments, nonprofits that the committee and the legislature doesn't see in the state budget. And the trustees have the authority to award grants and contracts to forward the comprehensive integrated mental health program plan. And that's what those grants represent. So we do everything that includes grants that go to our mini grant program, which is highlighted in the italics, $1.9 million that goes directly to impacting individual beneficiaries. It includes grants that are made to organizations that are we're partnering with and the Department of Health is partnering with in the Crisis Now initiative, things like that.
Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And good morning, Mr. Williams. Last year, we had a conversation about the grants and spending and authority grants and the mental health grants, and you had sort of an unspent category where you projects weren't quite shovel ready and they had to lapse those funds back to mental health trust. Do you have that percentage of last year's, I guess it would be FY23's, would be the finish year that you would have, and the percentage of sort of lapsed funding?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I do not have that percentage right here in the morning. What I can tell you what our goal is to try and not have more than 10% of awarded grants lapse anything. And
follow up?
My concern was it was more than 10%, I thought, in the previous year, and just wondering what this, I guess it would be FY22 was the, you had more than 10% in lapse funding, and just wondering what FY23's lapse was. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, well, they can get back to the our committee on it.
To the chair, we'd be happy to provide that information.
Job security will give you a whole list by the end of the meeting.
Hopefully we'll get it wrapped up before I'm here before you next year. So this illustrates the various state departments and the amounts that are going to the various state departments as MTAR grants for FY25. And I would just note, if you looked at the Department of Health and the Department of Family and Community Services, those are the two largest departments receiving trust funds. You could consider them one large grant. I mean, it's almost half of or 45% of that $10.2 million for a variety of programs and services within health and the Department of Family and Community Services.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The $1,620,000 to the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. What are those dollars spent on?
To the chair, Senator Hoffman, there's a later slide. I'm not sure it's going to add up exactly to that, but I can tell you, I'll give you a
I'll wait for the next slide. Thank you.
So this slide represents the Board of Trustees GFMH recommendations that were made to the administration and submitted to the legislature. By statute, we have to submit a budget that includes not only the trust spending, but recommendations from the board on how the state should be spending general fund dollars on a comprehensive integrated mental health program plan. So this does not represent all of the MTAR, but if there was a GFMH recommendation that included an MTAR amount or a match, that's included on here. And this represents differences differences from the governor's proposed budget, FY25 budget. So you can see on the left the trustee approved recommendations, and then on the right you can see the governor proposed budget, and you can see the differences there. The general fund recommendations that were included in the governor's proposed budget totals about 36% of our recommendations, and we recognize that historically that the general fund recommendations made by the Board of Trustees don't always entirely get included in the budget. Sometimes they get more or less than 36%, but we appreciate the consideration and the inclusion of those recommendations this year that were included in the budget. I would note the far right column, the items in blue, those were increments of trust funds that were included in the proposed budget that were not approved or included by the Board of Trustees in their recommendations. So these are Mental Health Trust Authority authorized receipts, trust funds that the administration included in the budget that, again, were not included in the board-approved budget. And maybe a little bit of history on that, Mr. Chair, is that by statute, the Board of Trustees is the only entity that can approve the expenditure of trust funds. When we make our recommendations for MTAR funding to the legislature, the legislature essentially provides the receipt authority for those departments to use the trust funds as they were approved by the trustees. And so the board, by statute, and this goes back to the lawsuit that was filed in 1982, settled in 1994, that established the trust. It's the Board of Trustees that has the authority to expend trust funds to forward the Comprehensive Integrated Mental Health Program Plan. So on this slide, you can see that there was $750,000 of unapproved trust funds included in the proposed budget, and this represents the operating side. On the next slide, I will show you the comparison for capital, because in the mental health budget bill, it includes both operating and capital funds.
Okay, we'll go to the next slide, and then we'll talk about this subject when you're done with that slide.
Sure. So this is the slide that shows the capital items, and to Senator Hoffman, you can see that the AHFC funds in the second and the third row of the trust funding, there's little over $1 million of trust funds going to HFC, and there are other projects that we are funding to HFC that don't have a general fund match, because remember, this doesn't represent all trust funding to departments. It only represents trust funding where there's an associated general fund request. And the differences here, you can see for special needs housing and the homeless assistance program, the recommended general fund mental health difference is the proposed budget doesn't include any of the trustees' recommendations in those two categories. And then in the row above for coordinated community transportation, you can see in the far right, there's a $50,000 increment of trust funds that was not included in the board's final and approved FY25 budget.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What percentage of these dollars for grants under capital are being spent in rural Alaska?
Through the chair to Senator Hoffman, I don't have the specifics, but I can tell you that there is a rural housing coordinator that is funded by the trust through AHFC that is, I believe, based in Kotzebue, and I believe there's another rural housing coordinator based in Nome.
Senator Hoffman.
Those are operating items. What kind of capital funds are being spent for, say, special needs housing grants or homeless assistance programs or home modifications? Are any of those construction dollars being spent in rural Alaska?
Through the chair to Senator Hoffman, I'll provide that list to you for obviously the previous year, and so that you can see statewide how those funds are breaking out. We'll work with AHFC to get that.
Thank you.
Senator Olson. Okay, any other questions? Just to, is this the final slide on the differences of the budgets presented?
To the chair, yes.
So we recognize our, our separation of powers issues are staying in our own lanes here. The Finance Committee with mental health. So we will work with you guys, and along with Office of OMB, the Governor's Budget Office, as we put the budget together and see if we can't smooth this issue out and come to some kind of mutual agreement on it through the budget process.
To the chair, if I might just add a comment to that, because I should have mentioned this as I was walking through that. We are also engaged with OMB, and we've had a previous, when the budget was released, I scheduled a meeting with the OMB director to kind of point this out and sort of the challenges with it. Mm-hmm. So we're working with OMB as well to try and get this addressed.
Okay. We would prefer that we had total authority, of course, at the finance table, but we recognize we don't. Just thought I'd mention that to you. Next so, slide. Yes, slide 12.
Mr. Chair. So this is a slide that just to illustrate the FY23 grants that were awarded. There's over 190 grants that were awarded statewide or have statewide impact. You can see the categories in the table on the left, and you can see the 14 regions that were received funding in FY23. I would also just kind of note that some of the grants that we award, whether it's in Anchorage or Juneau or Fairbanks or otherwise, have a statewide impact. So it's not necessarily that all these grants just serve one particular community in the state. Some of them have provide the ability to provide statewide services throughout the state.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did some rough math. I did find some numbers from past presentations on how much grant was awarded in the FY23, and I came out with 26,160 was the total number, and that's a little bit more than a total used to about a 15% difference in what was actually budgeted and allocated versus what was granted. So just wondering what happens to those unused funds, and would that lower our GF match for the budget if that would be allocated?
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, any unused trust funds that were intended for grants, if they don't get expended, come back to the trust. So they come back to the trust, and then they when I was providing the slide with the table that shows you how we calculate what's available for spending, it gets put into that four-year rolling average and then comes back out and is added into that to so that the funds can go back out in the future for grants, contracts, and programs that serve beneficiaries.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you provide my office with a breakdown of the $22.2 million with the 14 grantees that you list on this page for my office at a later date? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Yeah, they can do that. With enthusiasm, they'll do that. So, okay. It might be nice to back up and do a couple of years. Sometimes with the capital budgets, there's concentration in different areas of the state, so you can take a look at that system and try to give a good viewpoint or a good view of the recent past so we can get a good feel for what's going on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we can do that, Senator Hoffman, and might be a good point in time just to mention that our annual report was just recently released, and there was a FY23 investment report that accompanied that that lists out all of the grants that the trust awarded in FY23, and it provides the grantee name, the community, the amount, and so we will again, follow up with the Senator, but I just want to make sure that all of the legislators should have received these in their boxes this week. So you will have that list as well as hard copy. It's also available on our website in the future.
Okay. Yeah, and then just include that with Senator Hoffman's response, with the general response to the committee. And just for those watching at home, we get reports by the wheelbarrow load. So sometimes it takes a little while to get through them, and normally they percolate to the staff also. So
moving forward, so how do the trustees look at the spending for the future in the current year? As the committee is probably aware, we have focus areas, and these are listed on the screen. I'll describe these, as I've done in the past, as an umbrella. So the disability justice focus area is an umbrella under which there are many issues, programs, and services that impact our beneficiaries, whether they're youth that have contact with juvenile justice or adults who have contact with the adult criminal justice system, that we try to target and improve the outcomes to prevent folks from having contact with either one of those, or to, if they do have contact, what is the appropriate way to address their underlying health conditions. When is it appropriate to divert away to address those health conditions without placing risk to public safety? And hopefully to prevent an individual from getting caught up in a cycle where they're coming back and forth and through either the juvenile justice or the adult criminal justice system. I share that as an example because in each of these areas, there are umbrellas because there are so many things that the trust could be engaged in, and the things that they are engaged in require time to address and can't be necessarily resolved in one particular fiscal year or two fiscal years. These are some of the policy and advocacy areas that we continue to focus on. The community-based system is the foundation for programs and services for our beneficiaries. It is the system that allows them to thrive and improve and contribute in communities and with family and friends. Without a robust community-based system, we start to see things like people having contact either with OCS or with DJJ, or not being able to have access to behavioral health care when they're in a crisis. We're engaged, and there's been lots of conversations related to the impacts of COVID, the pandemic, and youth mental health, and that is an area of our focus, not just in how the results from that, but also how do we intervene earlier so that we can intervene, address the health condition to prevent that from exacerbating over the course of life. Medicaid and provider reimbursements. I know that the Department of Health is releasing an RFP to do a study on this. This is critically important for the community-based system to ensure that rates are appropriate, that rates, there's a methodology for keeping up those rates over the course of time, for the cost of doing business and inflation, because without that, rates can remain stagnant, and if they do remain stagnant, that essentially ends up over time becoming a reduction to the operating revenue. We're focused on how do we address the needs of elders with Alzheimer's, dementia, and other related disorders. Those are that's our beneficiary population. It's a slice of the senior population, but we know that that population is growing, and it's growing not only because we are an aging population, but as we are learning more and more about these health conditions, that the needs of them, there are things that we can do to try and support individuals going through that process. And then finally, reentry supports is just one of those advocacy items that falls under our disability justice focus area. And we know that if we can identify folks coming out of correctional institutions and do appropriate discharge planning so that when they reenter, they're connected to the services and supports in their community, there's a higher likelihood that they won't have continued contact. And that's an increase to public safety. Just a brief slide, and I'm not going to walk through this slide for the committee, but I just wanted to make sure that the committee had a picture of the work that the Department of Health, Family and Community Services, and the Trust has done since 2018 on the transforming how we respond to individuals in a behavioral health crisis. You can see from 2018 when there was a lawsuit filed against the state because folks were sitting in hospital rooms and in jails having not committed a crime, but were in a behavioral health crisis and they couldn't get into API. That was the tipping point for us to look at how do we transform the system. So this will give you a little timeline and the achievements that have been made to date and where we're headed in that regard. 2022 was the year that HB 172 was signed into law, and that was a major piece of legislation that members of this committee were a part of that helped to ensure that the system could respond to individuals in a voluntary status or an involuntary status if needed.
Question from Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's good to see that at least one community in rural Alaska got addressed in 6 years. That's it looks like Kotzebue, but I would implore the board to look beyond the rail belt, and because there are issues in rural areas, and in these 6 years, it would seem that the board would have a broader vision for all Alaska, because there are problems in rural Alaska as well. I would challenge the board to try to address that issue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. Next slide.
Next slide. I wanted to highlight, and this is maybe a good segue on to Senator Hoffman's comment, that the Trust did a rural outreach trip this past fall to the YK region. I want to start off by thanking the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, the Association of Village Council Presidents, AVCP Rural Housing. Those three entities hosted the trust and were really helpful in making sure that we got out to we didn't just stay in Bethel, we went out to 4 outlying villages to see how the services and programs and other needs of communities for beneficiaries exist, or if there are gaps, how they could be addressed. So we went out to Tuxuk Bay, we went out to Napaxiac, we went out to St. Mary's, and we went out to Kwikluk. There were legislators that joined us on that trip. There were commissioners and other department policy level folks. Senator Hoffman, your staff was able to join us, which was wonderful. And we had Representative McCormick on the trip as well. So the goal of that trip is to do is to achieve an improved education understanding of the needs of rural Alaska. And folks may remember that the Trust has done this historically every few years across the state. We've gone up to Nome, gone down to Ketchikan, Kotzebue, Fairbanks as a hub, and then flown out to villages. So It's not only benefits the trust, but it benefits the leadership in the various departments that join us on that trip, because oftentimes they don't have the opportunities to get beyond a hub community. Now I'd like to share a little bit about the work of the Trust Land Office. Justy Warner, the Executive Director of the Trust Land Office, is sitting behind me. And as I mentioned earlier in my presentation, there's a staff of 19 that she oversees. And for the public's benefit, as part of the 1994 lawsuit settlement that established the trust, in that settlement, it says that the trust shall contract with the Department of Natural Resources special section, the Trust Land Office, to manage the million acres of land of the trust. And the sole purpose of the management of that land is to maximize revenues off the land for to be used for the purposes of improving the lives of our beneficiaries and the mental health, comprehensive mental health integrated mental health program plan. So the table on the right will illustrates what is anticipated to be generated by the Trust Land Office in the various seven asset classes that we that they have. You can see that in FY24, the estimated revenue is $12.6 million. I would note that that revenue gets split into two different categories for the trust. Some of that, about 50% of that 12.6, would be revenue that's generated as principal that gets deposited into the corpus of the trust. And then the other half is spendable income, which, going back to how we estimate our available, that slide that had the estimated available spending, that is the spendable income that the trust, the land office generates that gets calculated into the overall total for that. These are some highlights. I believe the committee has heard about our fall land sale. We just concluded that this past fall, and the fall land sale generated a little over $2 million. The land office also can entertain over-the-counter sales of our parcels. You can see the other area that we've got is our area of forestry, Shelter Cove, Nocatee, fossil fuel mitigation, and Toke. That was a project where we had lands in Toke where there was fire risk, and so we cleared the land in that area, and then the timber from that clearing was used as biomass fuel to heat the school. So a win-win for the community. Renewable energy leasing. This is an area that we're starting to look into. We've leased lands for wind energy as well as solar energy. Down on the Kenai, there's some lands that are being leased for the development of solar that'll tie in with Homer Electric. And then the wind energy is across the inlet and up north to Healy. That ties into Chugach Electric as well as Golden Valley Electric. And then the subdivision work that we do, many of our parcels are large, and there's opportunity, and they're around communities, and there's opportunities for subdividing them so that they can be used for housing or other development in those communities or sold to individuals.
I just want to make a couple comments on the forestry. The committee over the last 15 years or so have been diligently working on the roads at Shelter Cove and Ketchikan. For those that don't quite know where that is, that's behind the community. Just think of it as the east side of Ketchikan, opening up hundreds of miles or connecting logging roads. And that has allowed the Trust Authority to access some of their timberlands to create this revenue. So not only do we get the revenue to the trust, but we get all the jobs that are coming with it and opening up recreation, cabin lands, and even to the point where the Forest Service is looking at putting in some cabins in some remote lakes. Nocatee, the timber sale there on Prince of Wales Island, is critical to keeping the timber industry alive on Prince of Wales, where their sawmill there is roughly 60% of the revenue of the electric utility. So it would be a significant impact if we were to lose the timber industry on Prince of Wales as far as the cost of the communities, which then would put more need for the trust authority to help on Prince of Wales Island. So it is appreciated that you've been very helpful in not only generating money for the trust authority, but keeping jobs in our communities and our communities viable. I just thought I'd, just bring that point up because there are so many capital projects over the years that move around the table here every year. But Shelter Cove has come into play numerous times here, and we can see the benefits of what we've done. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you get me more detail on the subdivision development endeavors that you have in the state? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Last year when we met with the committee, there was a request for some additional items on a project that we're working on north of Yakutat, the ICK project. This slide shows you in the bottom left portion of the slide shows you the trust lands, and what is called out is Grinder, which is about 200 acres in that overall parcel that we've been doing a lot of exploration work and core drilling to determine the mineral values of the project. This project started out as a heavy minerals project, but as we moved forward and did more sampling and got more information on the project, it's turned more into a gold project than a heavy minerals project, although the heavy minerals will be used, things like garnet, zircon, epidote, as part of a revenue generation for the trust. This would be a placer, not a hard rock mining project. We have done in that Grinder section, we have done over 60 core samplings that are now being analyzed for the mineral prospect, and we're hoping to have a pre-feasibility study completed by 2025 to determine how to move forward with the project. And I would say that right now we're very hopeful and it looks promising that a project will be able to then be put forward for a larger operation to develop the prospect that is out there on Icy Cape.
So I'd like to apologize to the trust for not getting there this fall, as we had mentioned before. But I would like to physically go up and take a look at that area. It has a unique opportunity to generate a lot of jobs and economic activity. So I'll bring my bucket in case there's lots of gold on the beach.
Probably get some. On the right-hand side of the slide, so at the top right is the sample processing facility that's on site. Those are core samples that were pulled from the sonic drill right below it. And then the camp out at Icy Cape is below there. And as far as the Trust Land Office and the staff that's overseeing it, Dr. Karsten Eden is the chief geologist on this project and has been working very diligently to keep it on track in terms of time, on budget, and to get us to a place where hopefully we can generate some revenue off of this land. This drills down just a little bit more to the bottom right, just as an aerial shot of the project itself. The camp is the clearing there, sort of a bottom middle. The anticipated revenue off of this on this project is, as you can see, is $100 to $150 million. That was estimated several years ago. So the price of gold has changed, and so the opportunity for increased revenue certainly is there. The economic activity, Mr. Chair, you mentioned the economic activity related to our timber work down in Southeast, but this also has economic activity and can help with communities in Yakutat and around there once this project starts to become constructed, and then assuming that there's operations over several years. We also, for the committee, are engaged with the community of Yakutat and have been engaged with the community of Yakutat since the beginning of this exploration. And then,
Yes, Senator Wilson.
Can we talk a little bit about how this is, would project be managed and who would be the partners and other sort of the management opportunities or how this is working with the land trust
office? Can you give the committee any more information on that? It's not top secret.
I can. Through the chair to Senator Wilson, right now we're doing the exploratory work to determine the what the value is there, and then we would put it out for an outside operator to then operate, construct and operate the mine itself.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if you or the Trust Land Office can talk about the risk tolerance on that. I know we've had other state corporations try and become the junior developer, and we've booked a lot of losses. The old model is to contract the private sector to serve as the junior and to remain the resource holder as a state. What is the risk profile?
Through the chair to Senator Keel, that's part of what we're doing right now to determine the risk of the project itself by determining the value and what is there on the land. And I can get back to the committee with more information on the specifics to that.
Okay, next slide.
The last slide, looking ahead, just to let you know that we're going to continue our work to support the state and our community agencies in our grant making so that we can improve the programs and services to meet the needs of our beneficiaries. Two falls ago, we had our first inaugural Improving Lives Conference, and that is, we're going to try and do that on a regular basis every couple of years. We have the dates for the next one in the fall of 2024, September 17 and 18. That'll be in Anchorage. I've mentioned the Comprehensive Integrated Mental Health Program plan a few times this morning. The current plan is coming to the end of its 5 years, and we're working with the departments to update that plan, and we look forward to having that updated this summer. I mentioned land sales as an opportunity for generating revenue, and yet again, we will have another fall land sale in the fall of 2024.
Okay. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to thank the board for all that they do and thank them for going out to the YK Delta. The Yukon Custom Health Corporation and Association of Village Council Presidents encompass an area larger than the state of Washington, has nearly 60 communities that it serves. It's the most populated and the most communities of any area in rural Alaska. But this is just one part of my district. I also serve the Bristol Bay region, the Alaska Peninsula, the Aleutian Islands, and the Pribilofs. And I say this because I was in the legislature when the lawsuit was filed in 87. And I also worked on the legislation that was finally adopted in 1994. And recalling, I had questions then, and recalling that they need to serve all of Alaska. And that is the thrust of the questions that I have to the board, because I think it's very difficult to look at and provide services fair and equitably. We try to do the same thing at this table, but I would implore the board to take a long, hard look at rural Alaska. I know we don't have an advocate for us, but we are a large population in rural areas of the state, and I would ask the members of the board to take that into consideration, because many times boards have the attitude out of sight, out of mind. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Williams, I'm assuming that some of these grants that you're giving out have an application process. I was wondering, how many grants do you, grant applications do you have from the rural areas? Do you have an idea?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I don't have that off the top of my
head. Or what the percentage is between the rural area versus the urban area?
Through the chair to Senator Olson, I can tell you generally that there are more grant applications from urban areas than there are rural areas.
Thank you.
Well, maybe you can get back with a little finer point on that when you answer all the questions we got for you today. Any other final questions, comments from committee members? Any final comments from the CEO or the chairman of the board of the Mental Health Trust Authority?
Thank you for your time and the questions and the dialogue. Always look forward to it and look forward to it next year.
Okay. I will quote you on that next year when we have you back. So tomorrow, that'll conclude today. Tomorrow morning will be our next meeting at 9 a.m. And we're going to have the administration's response to questions from previous hearings. We don't expect the presenter today to have questions for us tomorrow morning. But we'll have quite a few questions answered from previous hearings. We'll see everybody back at 9 a.m. We are adjourned at 10:03. We are adjourned.